This is Focus 580, hour number two of the program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne is at the controls this morning. Most people have heard about the problem of eating disorders in teenage girls, but what happens when those girls grow up? That is the question that we'll be talking about here in this part of Focus 580 as we talk with Tricia Gura. She's the author of a recently published book that looks at, as a subtitle suggests, the hidden epidemic of eating disorders in adult women. And the title of the book is Lying in Wait, and that's spelled W-E-I-G-H-T. The book is recently out from HarperCollins. You can certainly look for it in the bookstore. Our guest is a science writer. She holds a doctoral degree in molecular biology from Northwestern University, and she's written extensively for a number of publications, including Science, Nature, Scientific American, the Chicago Tribune, the Boston Globe. She's joining us this morning by telephone, and as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. The toll-free line is good also if it would be a long-distance call for you. The number is 800-222-9455. So again, in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Ms. Gura, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks, and yourself?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing fine.
We appreciate you giving us some of your time. You have a very personal interest in this subject, right?
That is correct.
This was something that you indeed got into writing about, first of all, because when you were younger, you had a problem with anorexia. And it was not just that, but also perhaps it was because of your feeling that as you got older, it was something that was not perhaps as serious a problem as it was, but that you also felt that it wasn't something that it had completely gone away. And perhaps that led you to wondering about or thinking about what the experience with other women was who had eating disorders when they were younger and what happened to those things when they got older.
Well, that is correct, exactly. And like many different ideas come, and this came in a conversation with a friend, and she had been diagnosed with bulimia, and she relapsed after her first pregnancy. And we were just talking about this, and as she told the story, I drew from my own, where I had been diagnosed with anorexia at 19, went through therapy and seemingly recovered because I had gained back to a normal weight. But then after my first pregnancy, I had what I call a mini relapse. So we went looking for information out there for women who are older than 25, and I'm a reporter and a researcher, and I couldn't find anything. And I thought, well, if I can't find it, there's got to be other women like me. We're part of an epidemic from the 80s.
Well, it's really interesting to me, you know, given the fact that within popular media, there's a fair amount of attention to the problem of eating disorders in girls and adolescents and perhaps young women. But then there's this point where if you look at the stories, what's being written about and the women that are in those stories, it just stops. And so one wonders, well, what happens there? Surely, as you found out, surely the problem for a lot of women doesn't just stop. But why is it that the kind of we don't see stories about women, say, who are 40 who have eating problems?
There's probably more than one answer to this, but one of them is the researchers who are doing the studies don't have the money to do what's called longitudinal studies or outcome studies more than a couple of years. So you ask what happens to these people, and they say, well, such and such gets better. In how long? Oh, 5 years. Mm-hmm. Okay, but if you're talking about 20 and 30 years, the oldest woman in the book is 92. Okay, an answer at 3 years is not going to be an answer at 30 or 40 years. So that's part of the problem. And then the other part is there's something very sexy about a young girl with an eating disorder, but a woman who's older considers herself a double loser, one because she has the eating disorder, and the other is, well, she should be over this by now.
Hmm. So is part of the problem perhaps that researchers aren't paying attention to this issue in older women, but are older women taking greater pains to conceal what's going on, or perhaps what happens is that the problem comes to be something that they can perhaps control a little bit more easily so that the effects aren't quite as visible. So for that reason, it maybe is easier for them to keep it more hidden.
That is very correct. The best anecdote I have to illustrate this is there was a couple, and the woman had active bulimia for 30 years, and her husband never knew, and he was a detective.
It's really difficult for me to believe that someone, you could live with another person for all those years and not know that something was going on, or at least suspect that something wasn't right.
Well, one of the things that I did in the book is I did a whole chapter just on marriage, and I went and I interviewed the men who were married or partnered up with women who had eating disorders or have them. And there's about five categories of men who partner up. And by far, one of the biggest categories is the male just doesn't know. And that sort of splits into two subcategories. There's that just doesn't know, doesn't have a clue. And there's doesn't know, has an inkling. But hey, life is pretty good, and I don't really want to rock the boat. She does her own thing. I do mine. It works. We're not going to go there.
Well, that just, you know, one wonders whether there are men that just are so unaware and so out of touch with their wives and what's going on, or whether that does tell you something about how effectively these women are able to conceal what's going on.
It's both. Women get very, very good, particularly with bulimia. Anorexia, it's harder because your weight. And there's something else called binge eating disorder, which a lot of people don't know is an eating disorder. It's bulimia without the purging. And so women tend to put on weight and are, quite frankly, obese. And it's not the same thing as just being obese. It's eating a large amount of food in a short period of time and feeling out of control to be able to stop. That's binge eating disorder.
And I suppose I also wonder, when it comes to couples, whether men might think that probably one of the least successful, potentially successful things to talk with your wife about is her weight. Maybe that's the kind of thing you just don't want to, it's not a subject that you want to bring up.
That's exactly true. And then there's other cases where the man knows she's sick. And he's a nice guy, and he wants to rescue her, and he really wants to help her. And it's not it sounds very noble, but in many ways he may have his own issues, and it's easier to help her than help himself. Or after a time, she can't get better because the marriage is built on his helping her. So she gets better, he's out of a job. So that's why these things are allowed to go on and on and on for years and years.
Our guest, just very quickly, let me introduce again, is Tricia Gura. She is a science writer, and she's the author of a newly published book that looks at eating disorders in adult women. The title of her book is Lying in Wait, and it is published by HarperCollins. It's just recently come out, so if you're interested in reading it, you can look for it in the bookstore. Questions also are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. In the book that you cite the fact that that one of the common figures that you'll see, this number attached to the number of women with eating disorders in the United States, about 8 million. And this is, I think it's pretty much the age group that you think of. It's girls and young women between 12 and 25. If, in fact, you had a more accurate figure, one that would include women of whatever age, how much bigger than 8 million do you think that number would be?
Eating disorders experts tell me the number is more like 15 to 20 million in the United States alone and tens of millions more globally. And that does include adult women. And part of the reason why there's an underestimate, that number reflects anorexia and bulimia, but the majority of eating disorders are not anorexia and bulimia. They're something else. And that something else doesn't get counted.
And what are the something else's?
So there's something called eating disorders not otherwise specified. So a woman who is 85 pounds or 85% of her normal body weight, who doesn't lose her periods for three consecutive months, does not have anorexia nervosa. She doesn't fit the criteria. So they call her eating disorders not otherwise specified. Or a person who binges and vomits, but doesn't do it, I believe it's three times a week. She doesn't have bulimia. If she does it once a week, it's not enough to qualify for bulimia. So she has eating disorders not otherwise specified. So it's that if you don't fit the rigid criteria for anorexia or bulimia, then you have something else.
Traditionally, I think, I guess also we think about this as being as something that where the onset is, let's say, pre-adolescence or the teen years. Is it possible for a woman to develop an eating disorder, or perhaps to make this more broad and say disordered eating, is it possible for someone to actually start when you were 30, 40, 50?
Absolutely. One woman in the book got diagnosed or got anorexia for the first time at the age of 68. So it's never too late to get it. And the prompter seems to be stress. Now, I don't mean just stress and you're having a bad day. Life stresses like marriage, pregnancy, parenting, mid or late life. So a big surge of people who are getting eating disorders is happening with women in their 40s and 50s. So we're seeing numbers triple and quadruple those of 10 years ago, and the greatest surge has happened in the last 5 years. And you say, what is going on in women who are 40 and 50? Well, this is baby boomers who are reaching issues of aging. There's divorce going on. There's menopause. There's empty nesting. These are all midlife transitions that are causing women to get eating disorders or at least triggering an already present problem.
There seem to be two things that you read about a lot when people try to explain what exactly is going on here. And part of it has something to do with control and maybe young women feeling that they're not in control of any aspect of their lives, or, and this is something that they can control, or perhaps hyper-control, that is, everything in their life is intimately controlled, and so this is one of those things. So that's one set of issues. And then the other really do have to do with appearance. And what we say in the society is attractive, and people's unrealistic expectations and maybe inability to see what it is that they really look like. Do all of those things, particularly for older women, do all of those things still kind of operate?
Yes, you have really hit the nail on the head. The two gateways toward eating disorders have to do with control issues and stress, and then also appearance. I want to be thin. So here's a way that it might look in a real context of a way. There was a woman in the book, Janet, who went through a divorce. She went through empty nest, and she was having trouble sort of figuring out her life. And so what did she do? She said, well, I'm dating again. I need to look better. I'm going to go to the gym. And that going to the gym and went way out of control. So she's going to spin classes in the morning and running 5 miles every night. She's subsisting on, I think, a salad for lunch and maybe strawberries and a bottle of wine for dinner. And it's just she has these bad feelings about her kids having moved away, the divorce, and aging issues, and they're all coming together. And her answer is the gym. And before she knows it, it's out of control. Because instead of facing all the problems of why she got divorced and why she feels sad and lonely, she's focusing on her weight and appearance. It's an easier problem to solve than the real issues that require a lot of work to look at.
Hmm. There are some certainly places where they specialize in dealing with adolescents that have eating disorders. What's the state of therapy that's directed specifically at or designed specifically for older women? Is there any?
Well, one thing is eating disorder treatment centers are becoming more aware of the subgroup of population of older women. And places like Remuda Ranch or Renfro have set up eating disorder treatment programs specifically for older women and their issues. And there is a new treatment center in Minnesota slotted to open up in, I think, 2008. That's just for older women, and the proportion of older women showing up are more. So obviously, there's more of an awareness, but still, the treatment for an 18-year-old is pretty much the treatment for an 80-year-old, except for this context of things like group therapy, where you'll put many women together in the same age group, in a group, and they can start to talk about their issues apart from just the behaviors.
Well, does that actually work, using the same kind of treatment strategy for a 15-year-old and for a 50-year-old?
It really depends on the person. So some people, therapy works fabulously well. And for some women who are older, therapy actually works better because there's something about age where a woman can say, you know what, I've had it. I'm tired of doing bulimia for 30 years. I've got to do something. And so she's willing to change. But at the same time, there are women who've been sick for so long, it's become a way of life. Bulimia is like brushing their teeth every morning. And so any kind of treatment, it's a lot harder. So again, it really does depend on the context, and it really does depend on the person, and it can help any person at any age.
Hmm. We have a caller here. Let's bring them into the conversation. Someone listening in Lovington. This is our line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I just wondered if men are any different. I suppose there's surely a few men that have these eating disorders. And I was also wondering if you'd comment, is it all societal pressure on women that causes this for the most part? Is it always a factor at least? I'll just hang up and listen.
Thanks. All right.
It's not just women who are getting eating disorders. And what will surprise you, especially with binge eating disorder, the number of cases of people who get binge eating disorder, 40% are men. And then in the case of anorexia, it used to be something like about 10% of cases were men, but that's going up to about 15%. So men do get eating disorders as well. The issues are a little bit different. So in the case of men, there's a parallel to anorexia called bigorexia. So this is a guy who's working out as a bodybuilder, getting bigger and bigger and bigger, absolutely obsessed about it, looks in the mirror and thinks he's small. So it's almost like anorexia, but backwards, and it's considered an eating disorder. And then also we're seeing cases of bulimia in men. And so as more and more focus is turning to body and looking younger, men are getting it too. It's just the ideal might not be the same as for women. For women, it's thinner and thinner and thinner. In men, there's more than one body ideal that they would like to achieve.
And is this, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but do you think that really societal pressure and that the idea that there is some ideal body type that everyone is struggling to conform to, and in fact, it's going to be different in men, it may be something very muscular, and then in women, it's going to be something like, you know, fashion model-like, that is the main source of the pressure, or is that just one of the sources?
It is one of three sources. So the pressure, the actual cause of an eating disorder is very complicated. It can be cultural, it can be psychological, and it can be biological. So when I say cultural, the best example is a study that was done in Fiji, where an anthropologist went down to look at the Fijian population because there were no eating disorders on the entire island for 3,000 years. And then in 1995, the chief of a particular village brought in television. And within 3 years, 11% of the teenage girls in this village were bulimic. And 80% were experimenting with dieting and all kinds of disordered eating behaviors and wished that they were thinner. So within 3 years, American TV caused eating disorders in Fiji. But that's not to say that there's not a genetic predisposition, because two people like myself and someone else see the same billboards, we see the same ads and the same TV shows, and I get anorexia and my friend doesn't. Why? Well, there was something about my predisposition where I took those messages and I internalized them more. I'm more of a perfectionist. I said, boy, I have to meet that ideal and I will. Whereas my friend said, well, yeah, I kind of want to, but you know, I'm not going to go to that extreme to do it.
Yeah. No, I think it's a really interesting point and worth people hearing that it is something that seems to cut to a great extent to cut across culture, to cut across socioeconomic lines, that it's something that you find in a lot of different places. You find it's not just a middle class thing, that it's quite pervasive and manages to cut across all those kinds of divisions.
Oh, it is so true. I've been asked to blog for Huffington Post, and one of the questions that was asked to me is, do eating disorders affect more than just people in the United States? And on my website, which is my name, Trisha Gura, TRISHA.com, we actually did a multimedia little presentation of all the countries that have eating disorders. You will find them everywhere. The only place I couldn't find them was Iraq, just because there's not very many reports being done. But they are in like Tanzania, they're in Mexico, they're in China, they're in Iceland. It's everywhere. And so they're definitely cutting across cultures. What seems to be a thread is that cultures or people within those cultures who want to assimilate Western values, they're buying our stuff. They're going to buy into our eating disorders as well. So if it's important to you to be American-like, then you're more likely to get an eating disorder to someone who's more tied to the native culture.
We have someone here on a cell phone calling from Muhammad, not all that far away, in line number one. Hello.
Hi. I just want to make sort of a complaint, and it's this. as you get older, your metabolism changes, and what you could eat when you were 25, you can't eat when you were 50 and maintain the same weight. And nobody seems to make, I don't see people making allowances for this and saying, well, yeah, it's natural to gain some weight and you should allow yourself. The statistics clearly show there's a normal weight gain with aging. And what it seems to me, part of what happens is that eventually you've been eating healthy, you think you've been eating healthy, and then you start to gain weight. And then you just say, this is ridiculous, I'm just disgusted, and you quit trying. Because, and it's not fair because no one's given you any way of saying, don't worry about it if, you know, a few pounds a year isn't so bad. And I also have never understood who sets up BMIs, who says what's ideal. I don't understand where that comes from. It seems like it's completely arbitrary. My wife's a dietitian, and she's never been able to tell me where they come from, and the BMIs never seem to have anything to do with age and allowing you to make the adjustments to that. And I also just wanted to add, as a comment, part of binge eating may very well be evolutionary, which was eat as much as you can when you find meat, you know, something to eat, because you never know when you're going to eat again. And you certainly see that in animals. But I'd like your comment about the fact that there's no, doesn't seem to be an accommodation to allowing yourself some weight gain when you get older, and shouldn't there be? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Well, I so agree with the caller. There is no accommodation being made, and we're seeing celebrities now, you know, as sort of our models at 40, 50, and 60. Not only are they trying to look or looking like they're 20 and 30, there's almost an imperative. You must look like you're 20 or 30. And if you don't, what is wrong with you? And that's where plastic surgery is coming in as well. You will put on weight as you age. Your metabolism does slow down. You do have to change your eating to accommodate that and also include more exercise and eat a better diet. That is true. The problem is the imperative is still there to look like a 20-year-old skeletal model. And so people are not forgiving themselves and allowing any weight gain. And there are those like your caller who quit trying. And then there are those who go to the other extreme and are at the gym more. And then that starts something going which can lead to an eating disorder one way or the other, either toward anorexia or toward binge eating disorder and obesity.
All right, let's talk with someone else. This is a caller in Champaign, and it's line one. Hello.
Hi. Is there the possibility that simply as a modern, civilized, mechanized society, we've simply become so lazy that we don't require kids to walk a mile and a half or two to school and older people to work their tails off keeping the house warm in the wintertime? I had noticed, and I'm getting old enough to know better, that when I don't work a whole lot, I get flaccid, and that ain't worth the trouble. And I'll listen to whatever you have to say.
Oh, you've introduced a very interesting topic, too, with kids as well, which is adults and kids together. Clearly, we're driving in our cars more. We're not getting as much physical exercise. And where a lot of the anti-obesity campaign is targeting is children and childhood obesity, which is a problem. But it turns out that a lot of these campaigns are not effective at best. And counter-effective at worst, because as we're walking around telling these kids that they're lazy and they have to go out and move more and that they're obese, and there's report cards coming home about kids who are fat, the kids are actually getting heavier. So the more criticism a child hears that you're fat and getting obese, actually the fatter they do get, because all it does is cause low self-esteem, which is the cause of a person eating more and doing what the second caller said, I'm just going to quit trying. You know what? It's just not worth it anymore. And kids don't have it within them to make the choices. But it's not just us being lazy. There's a huge advertising campaign out there pushing all kinds of junk food with just non-nutrition calories. So it's very hard to exist in our society and not get heavy.
Well, do you think that the legitimate concern, perhaps, that America's kids and teenagers are heavier than it's good for them, and that has to do with some combination of maybe not healthy eating with not enough exercise, that's sort of a legitimate kind of concern, but that message is out there so strongly that's hurting the kids who have the real problem, the kind of people that we're talking about, particularly girls, if they're hearing day after day this message that says, America, you're too fat, America, you're too fat, that they, even if they're not fat, they'll be standing there in front of the mirror and looking at themselves and saying, oh my God, look at me. And for this group of people that we're talking about, that message doesn't help.
It does not help at all. One of the best examples of what happened, one of the American idols, Jordan Sparks, someone came out and called her obese, and she's 17 years old. And all the girls, my daughter included, who's 11, who watched her and looked at her and said, you know, she's Jordan Sparks. She looks just like me. And then she's obese. She looks just like me. And then there's this terrible fear. And getting kids focused on their bodies and hearing again and again that they're obese is not helpful to their self-esteem. So instead of focusing so much on the body, it's not to say I'm supporting obesity or childhood obesity, absolutely not. And childhood obesity rates have doubled in the last 30 years, so clearly there is a problem. But the experts are telling me it's to put the focus on things other than just weight and appearance. Hey, my daughter's a good soccer player. Jordan Sparks is a great singer. What you can do, who you are, is more important than what you look like and what you weigh. So if we can get the kids focused on what they can accomplish and being themselves, it's a lot more productive, and their eating will be healthier than just harping on them, you got to lose weight.
Well, do you think the fact that we have had some highly publicized cases of celebrities, young women, really, what we're talking about, who are, say, in their 20s, who have said that they had eating problems, or it was said of them that they had eating problems, and that some of them have acknowledged that and said, yes, I did have a problem, but I went for therapy and I'm okay now. Does the fact that at least they are standing up and saying, yes, I have this problem, and yes, that it's treatable, does that actually help? Having then other, you know, other girls are looking at them and saying, well, it's okay it helps me acknowledge I have a problem. It's okay to say I have a problem and that there is something that I can do about it and that can help. Does that kind of publicity help?
Depends on whose ears it's falling on. Okay, so again, so for certain girls, it does help. You're bringing awareness to eating disorders. But if the message is that I had an eating disorder, I went into rehab for 6 weeks and I came out and I'm cured. Okay, bad message, because that's what someone like me heard that. Okay, so now when I'm 43 now, but when I was in my 30s and pregnant, it was like, well, I should be cured because I'm cured, because in 6 weeks, you know, these celebrities, and what's wrong with me if I'm not? So that's a difficult message. But the girls who are really on their ways, and boys too, who are on their way toward eating disorders, are going to look at the celebrities who came out there, and they're going to see this seductiveness and this almost mysticism about the eating disorders, and it can actually make it worse. Because it's like, well, gosh, she's so beautiful, and she had an eating disorder. I want one too.
Yeah. And it does seem to be the case, as you point out, that when someone has been able to do a longer range studies, that is looking at young women who had problems when they were younger and what happens when they get older, that it seems that, roughly speaking, about a third substantially get better, a third really never do, and that then there's a third where they may go through periods of time when they're doing pretty well, and then something will happen, and then they'll have a relapse, so that they may sort of go back and forth.
That's correct, this sort of rule of thirds. And it's the middle third that I've focused on a lot in the book, because as a person ages, what kinds of things are happening in their lives? So if you've had an eating disorder in the past, and you're in recovery at any particular stage, there's always some sort of risk that you could relapse to an eating disorder. It's a lot like alcoholism. So we would never ask an alcoholism, you know, are you over your alcoholism yet? And so, and at the same token, recovery is a lot more difficult in some ways from an eating disorder than something like alcoholism, because we would never ask an alcoholic to go to a bar three times a day, drink a beer, just one beer, and that's all, and then go home. But you're asking a person who suffered from anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder to eat three meals a day plus two snacks. Not too much, not too little. You can't abstain from food. So we expect that relapses are going to happen. It's just you try to minimize them, and then you try to get a person on their way toward health. So you'll never have to have an eating disorder again. You just have to be careful and know that if you're really in a situation that's very stressful, you should start amassing your supports and maybe going back to a therapist or maybe getting some friends around you or saying, yeah, I'm feeling kind of shaky, and be aware it can happen again.
We are just a bit past, well, maybe more than a bit past our midpoint here. I want to introduce again our guest. Then we have some other callers. Tricia Gura, our last name spelled G-U-R-A. She is a science and medical journalist. She does indeed have a website that you might want to look at. It's TrishaGura.com, so it's her name, .com. She also has a book out that deals with the problem of eating disorders in adult women, and the title is Lying in Wait. That's spelled W-E-I-G-H-T, and it's published by HarperCollins. It's in the bookstore now. Questions are welcome. We have some other people who are standing by here. Next, we'll talk with someone in southern Illinois, and this is line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Two questions. If you would explain the long-term health impacts of an eating disorder, and would you please give a little detail about her book? Is it more of a self-help book or statistical?
Long-term health impact of eating disorders, we don't even know all of them, again, because I said we're not following up people past the age of 25. But what we do know, in the case of anorexia, the risk of osteoporosis is sky high, particularly if you've gotten anorexia before you began your menstrual cycles. So that's something to be very careful of. With the case of bulimia, there's issues of depression. And sometimes when people enter recovery, they go through a period of depression. It's sometimes part of the disease. And there's all kinds of neurotransmitter studies being done linking serotonin to eating disorders. With things like binge eating disorder, diabetes and all the complications of obesity are definitely issues. And so beyond that, there's a whole list of medical complications depending on the severity of the illness, everything from bad teeth to gastrointestinal problems to complete organ shutdown if you're really sick. So you don't want to get an eating disorder, and you don't want to have one when you're older because your body is not resilient like a 15-year-old, and you're trying to go through all these kinds of problems. In terms of what my book is like, it's set up in chapters that go through the lifespan. So it starts with adolescence. It goes through marriage, pregnancy, parenting, mid, and late life. And in each chapter, it more or less gives women's stories who are going through or have gone through eating disorders in that period of life. And then hundreds of medical articles and journal entries are woven in there. It's not a science-heavy book that an academic would read. It's definitely for the layperson. But the facts are there. And then the last chapter is the most self-help. It just goes through all the treatment options that are available, everything that we know from standard psychotherapy to alternatives like yoga, Pilates, mindfulness, group therapy, biofeedback to the internet.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank
you.
And let's go to another caller. This is someone in Aurora on our line four. Hello.
Yes. Hi. Good morning. Very good subject, as always. Richard Simmons asked to please have parents call their schools and have exercise put back in the class. Evidently, many schools are cutting out PT for whatever reason. Maybe to put more math into their lives. And I wanted to say that. And I wanted to say also that my daughter was in France, and she says, Mom, I didn't see one overweight person in France. But she said when she had to go to the bathroom, she had to go up quite a high spiral staircase to go to the bathroom. She says, you know, Mom, you'd never see that in America. No, everything is very accommodated, very much right there. We don't do anything like spiral staircases. So thanks again for a wonderful program.
All right, thanks. Well, what do you think about physical education in school, and if that's been taken out to make time for academic work, do you think that that was a bad decision?
Yeah, I do, because physical exercise, especially if it's integrated into a child's life, okay, it's part of it. It's not like you go to the gym to work out and then go home. It's more like you walk to school. You know, it's part of your life. That's much better. It's in the United States, we have, as your caller identified, a polarity about weight issues. On the one hand, we have obesity, and on the other hand, we have anorexia. It's almost like we've lost our sense of moderation, and it's happened politically in other areas as well, but it's almost like we're trying so hard to be anti-obesity that in the people that don't need to hear the message, they're overhearing the message and getting anorexia, and the people who are hearing the message are choosing to discount it. I've heard it already. I know what I should eat. I want to do this anymore. Stop already. And at the same time, these messages are being couched alongside advertising for so much junk food. One of the things that I did in one of my newsletters and on my website is I pulled out ads and had arrows showing, like, you'll have an article about anorexia nervosa and ads flanking it for weight loss pills. And it's the most bizarre way we do things here in the United States. But France is getting eating disorders, so they're not quite as pristine as your caller would believe.
If you, I don't mean you personally, if a woman had, when she was a girl, had an eating problem and she has a daughter, does that increase is her daughter more at risk than if her mom had not had that problem?
Well, I could speak to this statistically and personally because I have an 11-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. Generally, when a person has an eating disorder, her relatives are 7 to 12 times more likely to have an eating disorder, and it doesn't have to be the same one. And often you'll see cases where you have a mom who's got a binging problem, like binge eating, and her daughter ends up with anorexia. It's almost a compensatory issue. You'll see moms and daughters both with anorexia. But I've had cases, and they're detailed in the book, where a mother will have two daughters, and the mother has an eating disorder. And one of her daughter gets it and the other one doesn't. And you think, what is going on here? So there's a mix of genetics that are being passed on to kids from mother to daughter. But there's also a series of behaviors that are being passed on. And it's very hard to dissect out, well, you know, is it just bad parenting or is it bad genes? Well, likely it's both because genes are there. Genes load the gun, but environment pulls the trigger. I could be born with a bad set of genes that are going to give me an eating disorder, but that eating disorder doesn't have to be realized if I'm existing in an environment that doesn't have all the culture bombarding me with, you know, the need to be thin.
Hmm. Going back to the experience of women who have eating disorders, if you take a look at particularly at the central third, we talked a little bit earlier about the rule of thirds, is that if you take a look at women who had a problem when they were younger, that when they get to be older, and when we mean older, I guess we're talking about past the mid-20s, that roughly speaking, a third of them pretty much get better so that they don't ever have a problem again. A third of them really never get better. And then there's the central third where the problem kind of waxes and wanes. What is going on there, is it possible to say, in the life of the woman that's causing that to happen? I mean, why does it maybe get better when she gets into her 20s and 30s, but then gets worse again, gets better again, gets worse again?
I'll give you a story that might help illustrate it. There was a woman, she was named Laura in the book. She had diagnosed with anorexia as a teenager. And she went through, she's 65 now, so psychotherapy wasn't as good as it is now. So she went through some psychotherapy and she stopped her symptoms. She married a wonderful man, 30 years, two kids, fine. Her father was diagnosed with liver cancer. She had to go take care of her father in his house. Within 2 months, she had dumped like 40 pounds. It was the stress. It was almost in her mind going back to adolescence when she was dealing with her parents at home. So she didn't resolve certain issues as an adolescent. Went on living her life perfectly fine for all intents and purposes. But when she was put into this stressful situation, dealing with an individual who probably contributed to what went wrong in the first place, she just fell apart and recapitulated the whole illness. She was smarter this time, and she had a husband, and her kids got her into therapy, and she was able to. She's fine and doing quite well now. But that's one way it can pop back up again.
We talked earlier about the amazing thing that it seems that in relationships there can be women who have serious problems. There can be women who, for example, had bulimia and had it for decades, and that somehow their husbands never managed to know. So there can be a range of men here, either men who are completely clueless and don't know anything is going on, men who suspect but aren't really perhaps sure what to do or don't want to say anything about it. And then, you know, it could be that men who, it's not that they don't care, but they sort of say, well, that's her, that's up to her. For men who do suspect something's going on or know something's going on and they want to help, what's the right way for a man to approach his partner on this?
Well, there was one in the book who did a phenomenal job with this. Well, maybe not at first. He was married for 15 years before he finally decided to say something. And it took friends going to him three times saying, your wife has a problem. I mean, we go out to dinner with her and she eats like three meals and then she disappears to the bathroom. She's got a problem. So he sat her down and he went and he did his homework. So step one, do your homework. There's resources on my website, trishagura.com. There are also a host of eating disorder organizations that have hotlines. Find out the facts about eating disorders, what they are, what they aren't, and where this person might go for treatment. Then sit her down and say in a non-confrontational way, this is what I'm observing. This is what I'm seeing. This is you seem to be hurting yourself. I'm really, really worried, and I'd like to help you. I'm here for you. Don't make any threats, like I'm going to leave you if you don't, and so forth. And then this gentleman or man might want to get help himself. Eating disorders are really insidious, intractable diseases, and it's very hard to go through a person who is going to go through recovery, and recovery is not a straight line. It goes up and down. There are steps forward and step backs. And he may want to go just for his own support, or he may be unwittingly contributing to the problem, maybe making a derogatory comment, you know, your butt's looking a little big there, or trying to help, or, you know, putting locks on the refrigerator. Husbands have done this, you know, and he thinks he's helping her. It's not helping her. She feels out of control already. You put a lock on the refrigerator, that's not helping. And so to learn himself how to be a support to her and help her out.
Let's talk with someone else in Champaign, line one. Hello?
Line one?
Yes.
Yes, I want to ask a question about another kind of eating disorder. I was always a normal weight, and then after some stress, suddenly I began to lose weight, and I'm now 100, and I'm 85 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've discovered now is that eating alone and cooking your own food does not stimulate your appetite. What I was doing was eating until my appetite was satisfied, but that wasn't anywhere near enough to keep weight on. So I've just discovered that if I eat with a friend or go out and have one meal out, and a good meal, good restaurant, that I suddenly can stretch my stomach and I can eat everything on the plate instead of taking half of it home. And so I'm realizing this is sort of a discipline problem, and I've always thought that older women look much more attractive when they have a little weight on them, and thin women are not very attractive. So do you deal with that at all? Or anyway, I'd just see what your comment is, and I'll sign off.
All right.
Well, I most certainly do deal with that. This would be the chapter on late life, and it's the least studied group of eating disorders. Your caller fits so well. There was a study done by John Morley and his colleagues. They found that when a person has a companion to eat with, they eat significantly more food. In fact, they were training Meals on Wheels volunteers not only to deliver the meal, but to sit with the person while they're eating, because then the person is more likely to eat more. So that's part of the issue. There are some drugs that they were experimenting with. One was called Magace, just to sort of build up a person's appetite. As a person gets older, beyond what one of the previous callers was talking about, your metabolism slows down, beyond the age of 70, all kinds of biological changes happen in the stomach. It's more difficult to absorb food. The body doesn't produce as much saliva in the mouth, so food is drier. It's harder to eat when you're older, and if you're eating by yourself, and if you're experiencing something like grief because your spouse has died, you just don't want to. And it's a very dangerous time. So not only does an older person look better, heavier to a certain degree, they also are healthier, heavier, because generally a person is going to start losing weight after the age of 70, not gaining weight.
We're coming to the point where we have maybe about 3 minutes left. You talked about the fact that the book is organized according to various stages in the life course. Just maybe we might talk for a couple of minutes about pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And how this enters into it. And what I think is sort of interesting, given this consuming concern about weight, is actually it seems that a lot of women, when they get pregnant, that's a good thing for them.
That is very true. You would expect that somebody who's freaked out about gaining 1 pound going to go absolutely ballistic when it's 30 pounds or so. Well, what is found out is that women who are pregnant actually do better eating disorder, then they stop their symptoms either altogether or they really cut back. It's probably one of two things going on. What I can't do for myself, I can do for my child. Mm. And for some women like me, I remember this. It was my first permission to be fat. I'm allowed to be fat. So the first 3 months were a little difficult when you're just kind of bigger. But when you clearly start looking pregnant, and society reveres a pregnant woman, the difficulty is postpartum, where women suffer about 3 to 10 times the norm of postpartum depression. So if you are pregnant, experts tell me you should be seeing somebody. If you have a history of an eating disorder and you get pregnant, it would be a very good idea to get some therapy, if not during the pregnancy, for afterwards when you have the baby and you've got all the stress to deal with and your own body is not going to look the same after you give birth.
So do you think that, we talked earlier about the fact that within popular media, there has been significant attention to the problem of eating disorders in teenagers, girls, particularly teenage girls and in young women, and that for that reason, we maybe shouldn't be blamed if we think that this is pretty much a problem of teens and young women and that you don't see it in older women. And as you have said, part of the reason for writing this book wasn't to investigate this and perhaps to get out some awareness that, in fact, it can be a problem for older women. Having said all that, do you think that the issue will get a more nuanced kind of understanding of the issue, understand that it is maybe a little bit more complex than we thought, and understand that it can indeed continue to be problems with food, can indeed continue to be problems for women past their mid-20s and in fact all the way into their later years?
I most certainly agree, and also because eating disorders lie in a spectrum. So anorexia doesn't necessarily mean you're in the hospital. There's a whole serious issue in terms of, on the one end, there's a bona fide eating disorder. But on the other end, a lot of women, most of them, will say things like, well, I have a food issue. Okay, I have to count out 24 frosted mini wheats in my cereal bowl each morning, no more, no less. That's a leftover from all the portion control that I did when I'm dieting. Or I have to exercise every day. I can't miss a day or I'm depressed. Okay, those are not eating disorders. Those are just kind of food or body issues. But as you get older and you're more stressed out, and believe me, baby boomers are going to bring this issue to the fore as more and more are getting them. You can push a food issue towards something more serious and all the way into an eating disorder if a person is not careful and not aware of what she's doing to her body.
And for women who maybe do indeed have food issues, not serious enough to get the diagnosis of bulimia or anorexia, I mean, do you think that the medical profession needs to have something better to say than eating disorder not otherwise specified?
Oh, most definitely, because these women oftentimes, if a food issue is there and it's affecting your life, it's affecting your marriage, it's affecting how often you'll go out, it's affecting what you eat when you go out, et cetera, then you are not living your life to the fullest. And you might benefit from some sort of therapy or at least an awareness of what you're doing. So I do think we could do a lot more toward tackling this problem.
Well, for people who are interested in reading more, you can look for the book Lying in Wait. Again, that's the weight spelled W-E-I-G-H-T. The subtitle is The Hidden Epidemic of Eating Disorders in Adult Women. It's published by HarperCollins by our guest Tricia Gura, G-U-R-A. And she also does have that website you might want to take a look at. That's trishagura.com. And Ms. Gura, thanks very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.